Hi everybody, we're on the agenda slide for the contract section, and we are going to essentially demystify the contract. We're going to go over several different contract options for you so you can see how you put them together and how this works. The one-page option contract is a very simple and easy-to-use contract. It will be very useful to you as you're just getting started in your investments, and you don't want to go through all of the details of a real estate contract. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. We're going to go ahead and go through the one that we put together for you and we have on you for this page. This one-page contract is the quick and easy contract. It's one of the most straightforward contracts that you'll have and that you'll see. Now, again, just like with everything else, you know, we're not attorneys, etc. And you do need to get this reviewed with your attorney because some of the different laws in the different states, you know, townships, counties, etc., may be a little bit different and may not allow you to use something like this. But this will be an excellent starting point for your attorney as they're looking through it and seeing what applies best for you. In addition, we are going to go ahead and go through the full multi-page contract, at least the one for the state of Texas, so you can see how that's filled out in our examples. One of the things that you have to understand when you're working with a client is, you know, the way that you talk to them is just as important as what you say. Phil always says there's both the steak and there's the sizzle. So part of the sizzle on this particular piece, if Phil will let me use that analogy there, is that we authorize an agreement. We don't sign an agreement. We don't sign a contract. It's just sounds a little bit better. It sounds a little bit more palatable when you're working with someone who's maybe a little bit nervous about signing something, about, you know, moving forward on something. So signing a contract versus authorizing an agreement, you know, the way that you say those two things makes a world of difference in making some people feel comfortable or not. You know, everyone's taught to, you know, don't sign a contract unless your attorney sees it, or, you know, maybe your parents, you know, see it, or somebody else in your family looks over it. So that just sort of takes out that issue when you're doing, you know, any sort of a contract by using the phrase, you know, authorize the agreement. Now, this one-page contract is perfect for wholesaling. It's just, you know, it's just an excellent contract for someone, you know, to use when you just want to boil it down to its simplest terms. You know, if it's a wholesale deal and you understand and you know you're going to wholesale it, you know, you may or may not want to put it on the full TREC agreement or the full state contract agreement. We call it here the TREC agreement. But this is very, you know, straightforward. One of the things about these contracts, though, is that because it doesn't hit every single detail, like who's going to pay for the closing costs, who's going to pay for, you know, who gets the tax prorations, what are we going to do on some of the other items here? Because it doesn't go through that, you will want to go ahead and move this, transfer the information over to a state contract or, you know, a county or township contract, whatever you guys use, after you go through this process of just at least getting them under contract and getting the deal wrapped up so that you're the only one who can, you know, purchase it or market it or whatever. Now, in this contract, you'll notice at the bottom portion of it, there's a section for a notary agreement. Why do we use that? Well, we use it just in case we actually need to file this document with the county clerk. If we file it, if we record it, then if another investor is interested in it, we can effectively block their purchase because we went ahead and filed this contract. Now, from what I've seen, most state contracts do not have a notary section in there. So this is sort of an added little bit of protection for, you know, you, the investor, when you're dealing with a seller who may be shopping your deal out to other people even after you go under contract, which, believe it or not, that happens, and unfortunately it happens probably about 20, maybe 25% of the time at the most. Let me just go ahead and read through some of the sections here just so, you know, you guys can sort of walk through this with me and I can explain any of the specific items in here so you guys can feel comfortable a bit about it. Now, this is an option agreement. An option agreement is basically, you know, you as the buyer, you as the investor have the option to cancel the agreement at only, you know, at your request. So it says here, that for and in consideration of X dollars, which it would be your option fee, and we'll go into some detail about this pretty soon, but let's say you put in $10 here, receipt of which is hereby acknowledged, herein referred to as the optioner, so the person who's, you know, getting it is or giving it is referred to as the optioner, hereby grants to its successors and assigns, herein referred as optionee, an exclusive right and option to purchase the following described property. So, you go ahead and you list the legal description of the property, and you also list the actual physical property address. You're going to go ahead and list in here, you know, for example, 1234 Main Street, Austin, Texas, Travis County, and then obviously your zip code. Option period. This option period, which is revocable for a period of 30 days of the date hereof. So basically, you're asking them for a 30-day option. Now, guys, these are your contracts, right? You can make it 30 days, you can make it 5 days, you can make it 90 days. And those different time periods, you know, you see them all the time. They're quite, you know, people will use them quite frequently. We just have 30 days in here for you guys as an example. Purchase price. The purchase price for the above described property is X dollars. If you're buying a $150,000 property, then this is where you would write that in. The consideration paid herein shall be applied against the purchase, meaning the option fee that you paid will be applied towards the purchase. Forfeiture of consideration. Number three, if optionee fails to exercise this option before its expiration, the consideration paid herein shall be retained by the optionor. So if you as the optionee, if you as the investor, you know, exercise your option, then and you're going to go ahead and give, basically you're saying you're going to give that $10 that you listed at the top part of this agreement, you're going to go ahead and give that to the seller, to the optionor. Notice of options exercise. Optionee's election to exercise this option shall be by execution and delivery to optionor of a contract of sale on a form promulgated by the Texas Real Estate Commission on or before the expiration date hereof. Upon delivery of said executed sales contract, optionor shall execute the same within 5 days. So basically that's saying if you as the optionee elect not to terminate the contract, meaning you're going to move forward with the contract, then what you're going to do is you're going to put that contract onto a state promulgated form, and you'll notice here we reference this Texas promulgated form. Now, whatever state you guys are into, you just, instead of having Texas there, you're going to go ahead and write in whatever state you're in. And then within 5 days of you delivering that to the optionor, aka the seller, then at that point, you're going to go ahead and they're going to go ahead and sign it. You've already signed it when you gave it to them, and they're going to go ahead and sign it. Binding effect. So this option shall be binding on optionor, her heirs or his heirs, successors and assigns, and shall inure to the benefit of optionee, its heirs, successors, or assigns. So basically, if someone dies, you know, we're still under contract, and there's still a succession of which the benefits of these contracts would be given to. If you, for example, if the seller dies, basically the seller's heirs would still be bound by this contract. That's what we're trying to say. Technically speaking, that may not be the case. And again, we highly recommend that you talk with your attorneys in your state. But this is just a good way to sort of make them aware that you're thinking about that. Now, it also has an execution date here. And you write in the date, and you write in the county, and you write in your state. And then it is signed by the optionor, which again is the seller. And then we've got a little notary section up here or down here, and it basically just says that the optionor, the person who's selling the property, went ahead and signed this before me on such and such date. Here's their notary stamp, and here's their commission expires date. Now, I want to go back up to the top of the contract because I think I may have read this a little bit wrong, and I want to make sure I'm clear with you guys. So let's go through it again. That foreign consideration of the $10 option fee, receipt of which is hereby acknowledged by the seller, hereby referred to as the optionor, and it hereby grants to the buyer or optionee its successors and assigned, hereafter referred to as optionee. So the first blank, you put in the amount of the option money. The second blank, you put in the name of the seller. And then the third blank, you go ahead and put in your name or the name of your company and or assigns. Fourth blank, your legal description. Fifth blank, the address. Sixth blank is the purchase price. And then the rest is the date and the county and the state and then the signatures by the seller and then the notary should you decide to use a notary. Here are a couple of additional tips when you're filling out a contract. This is the contract slide. Specifically, when you're filling it out, we do want you to take a look at the separate contract that we have in here for you, as well as the addendum, and we've got a larger copy for you of it in the appendix, but we've also referenced it in your actual manual here. Now, one of the things that I have to repeat over and over and over again, even to experienced investors when they're trying to tie up a property, is this. Please make sure that all relevant parties are there. Please make sure that all relevant parties have agreed. Please make sure that they're all, you know, signed, sealed, and delivered. It's not going to do you any good if you get a house under contract with the wife if the husband hasn't signed. It's not going to do you any good if you get a contract with the husband and the ex-wife hasn't signed. You have to make sure that all relevant parties to the transaction, anyone who's on the deed, is there to sign the contract. Because guess what? As soon as the title company does their research, they're going to come back and they're going to say, well, who's this other person that we see on the deed and why aren't they signed on the contract? So be sure to get that. Otherwise, you don't have a contract. Otherwise, there's really nothing much the title company can do for you. And you can't force one person to sell the house for both people. You actually have to get both people to sign before you can make them sell you the house. I always tell this little tip too. Put down as little earnest money and as little option money as you possibly can, because when you're buying, you know, when you're buying a house from a motivated seller, you know, you never know what's going to end up happening. Things do go wrong from time to time. As an example, you know, the seller who's the wife may tell you, hey, I'm the only person on the deed. I have full ability to sign this contract. Go ahead and give me, you know, $1,000 in option money and $1,000 in earnest money. Take the, you know, earnest money to the title company, write me the check for the option money, and then you have the property. It's all yours. And then it's not until later that you find out, well, actually, you don't have the property. It's not all yours because there was actually a husband that was still on the deed to this. And you don't want to have to try and go back to fight that person to get that money back. That's why I always say put down as little money as you possibly can, as the seller finds acceptable. And always negotiate as long of an option period as you possibly can. You may not exactly have your exit strategy figured out yet. You may be wholesaling this property. If you're wholesaling it, then you definitely want extra time to be able to find an end buyer so that you can execute that strategy. If you know you're going to buy it and there's nothing that's going to stop you and you have the cash or you have the hard money approved or you have even a loan approved, then you may be willing to do a shorter option period. But my suggestion is when you're buying, always get as much time as you need because you never know what could happen. You know, you go under contract, for example, with property number one, and then the next day you get a call about property number two that's a much better deal, and you want to go with that property instead. Well, you know what? If you didn't leave yourself enough time to figure out, you know, how to dispose of property number one, you know, whether it be wholesaling it or, you know, whatever you're thinking about doing, then you might lose your option money, maybe even your earnest money. Let's hope not, but maybe, and you don't want to be left out in the cold. You know, as real estate investors, we never have enough money to do all the investing that we want to take on all the different deals that we want. So do always leave yourself some options, and this is a one way to do it. Now, we're also going to talk about In fact, we're going to go through a major section about what to include in your special provisions. These are going to be things that, you know, you're going to include just in case you want to get out of the contract. These are going to give you some outs. I've listed a couple here, but we're going to go through some more in this section, plus a lot more in the actual strategy section that will cover you from head to toe for your special provisions as you're writing up some of these contracts. Just some examples that I'm going to go ahead and give to you right here. Is, you know, the contract is subject to inspection. It's subject to lender approval if you're getting a hard money loan or if you're getting a regular conventional type loan, or your partner still has to walk in and see it. There are many times that Phil will walk into a property and say, you know, yeah, this is a great house, I love it. And then I may come in later and say, ooh, I don't know if I want this or not. So, you know, if you're working in a partnership, you definitely want to go ahead and write that in, because one of you may love it and the other one may not, and you just don't know that right as you're walking in. And like I said, we're going to go through several more in some of the upcoming slides. Filling out a contract. Here are some general things that you're going to need to know as you're doing that. Earnest money and option money are the topics of this slide. Earnest money, it's perfectly fine to offer $100, $10. Don't offer more than 1%. $100 or $10 is more than enough to prove that, you know, you've got it under contract to prove that you're earnest. Typically, when you're reselling the property, though, when you're reselling to a retail end buyer, you want to get as much earnest money as possible. Typically, about 1% is not uncommon, but when you're putting a property under contract and you, the buyer, are the, you, the investor, are the buyer, then that's when you only want to put about $100 for earnest money. I will say that when you're making decisions on how much to put down, it's going to depend on a lot of different variables. One of those variables is there other competition? Are there other investors that are looking at this property and considering purchasing it too? And are they, you know, also offering the exact same amount of money that you're offering? You know, what's the differentiating factor between a seller going with you or the seller going with somebody else? Sometimes, and we were just talking about steak and sizzle, you know, you can add a lot more sizzle if you raise your earnest money from, you know, $10 to $1,000. In fact, very recently, yesterday, in fact, I actually had to increase my earnest money because it was a property that I really wanted. Why is that? It's because I already had it sold to somebody else. So I was okay with increasing the earnest money from $10 to $1,000. And, you know, depending on how badly you want it, you may go up even higher. Pardon me. It also depends on, you know, how willing are you to maybe lose that earnest money if you're not able to, you know, get that exit strategy that you're looking for. If you, you know, aren't able to find your buyer, if you get out of your option period and forget to terminate, you know, that gets a little bit scary. So that's why, you know, putting down as little as possible gives you the most amount of options and gives you the least amount of risk, which as investors, we like, you know, cutting our risk very much, right? One of the things about earnest money, and the same about option money as well, is you need to take both the earnest money and the contract to the title company or to your closing agent, to your closing attorney, within 2 days of going under contract. Why is this so important? Because in most contracts, there's a little notation in there, a couple words in there, one sentence in there actually that says, time is of the essence. Okay, what does that mean? That means everything in this contract has to be done, you know, in the time period that's prescribed here. And if you dilly-dally around and don't put the earnest money in the contract at the title company or the closing attorney, well then, you know, the seller could say, well, we never really had a contract because you didn't do what you said you were going to do, which is take the earnest money to the title company, okay? And typically the time period that's been allowed in the state of Texas, at least, is about 2 days. So if you, everybody signs the contract and it's executed on the first, that contract needs to be to the title company no later than the, you know, time of the end of day on the third. Now, some people will say it could be the end of day on the fourth, but I'll tell you what, guys, why chance it? Just get it over to the title company as soon as you can. Now, option money and option time, same thing with option money. You know, $10, $100, that's perfectly fine. As a regular buyer, a retail buyer, someone who's putting an offer in on your, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 home, they may only offer you somewhere between $100 and $300 or $400 in option money. As an investor, you know, you again want to risk as little money as possible because you're going to have multiple offers out to multiple people all the time, and you don't want, you know, your $10 going everywhere, and you just don't want to, or your $100 going everywhere. You just don't want to risk that amount of money if you don't have your exit strategy already lined up. So $10 is a great, you know, amount to start with. And with $10, you can ask for 10 days, 45 days, 90 days. Some, you know, I've seen some investors will write in 120 days. But, you know, again, it's okay to offer that little, you know, don't get worried about it. Unless, again, you know, if there are some other factors like competition is in there. You know, I told you the example that I just had recently where I had to up the earnest money. In that particular case, I didn't have to up the option money. But, you know, the earnest money was the part that they wanted to haggle about. And I said, okay, well, we can work with you on that. Let's see. And $10, just to let you guys know, you know, it's more than enough consideration to have an official option contract. You know, most investors, you know, depending on what their exit strategy is, will ask for anywhere from 10 days to 45 days. And using the mortgage assignment plan, sometimes we'll ask for 90 or 120. It just depends on what the actual exit strategy is. Is the house going to auction in, you know, 2 weeks? Then guess what? You're probably only going to get a 10-day option period because the seller doesn't want to futz around with you while you're trying to decide what the heck it is you want to do with this property. So do be sensitive that your option period will vary based on what your final exit strategy is with it. If you're looking to wholesale it and you're telling the person that you are going to buy it and or somebody else that you know is going to buy it, then go ahead and put in as long as you can. But be sensitive to the fact that a lot of these houses with these motivated sellers are going to be on the auction list. You know, they're going to be, you know, motivated to get some of these solutions done and satisfied as quickly as possible. So don't be shocked again if, you know, they say, I'll take your $10, I can work with that, but I cannot give you a 90-day option period, but I can give you 45. So just work as much as you can and based on the situation, and just see how long you can get. Now, just like we talked about with the earnest money, you have to get the option money to the seller shortly after you actually go under contract. Some people prescribe to the reality that, hey, as soon as you deliver the contract, even before the seller has signed it, you need to have that option fee right there and ready for them. Now, at least with the Texas contract, there is a section on there where they actually write and sign that they have received that option money. Now, that's important because then they can't come back to you and say, well, hey, I never, you know, got that, and we never really officially had a contract. If you're getting them giving them option money, especially if it's cash, you do need to go ahead and get them to sign for that. We're going to go through a couple other sections, actually several other sections in here for filling out contracts. In fact, the next section is going to be some more special provisions, so ways you can get out. So we'll get to that shortly. Filling out a contract in general. This is part two where we're actually going to go into some of the general and or generic special provisions. These are ways that typically an investor will use to get out of a contract. And I'm going to read through some of these, but at the end I'm going to tell you what we typically write in so you can understand how some of these special provisions are typically used. A lot of the investor language that you'll see in a lot of these option contracts include the following, which is buyer will notify seller in writing within X amount of days. In this example, we wrote in 60 days, if the property is acceptable and if the buyer will close on the transaction. Now, if the buyer does not notify the seller, the contract will automatically be terminated and the earnest money will automatically be refunded to the buyer. So basically it says, if I as the investor never get back to you, then the contract's going to terminate. But if I get back to you, and for example, if we're on a one-page contract and I want to put you over to a full state contract, then I'm going to get back to you and I'm going to tell you that. And that's going to mean that we are fully under contract there, right? Another one, seller must respond to buyer within 24 hours or buyer may withdraw this contract. Basically, this means I don't want you going out shopping my contract to anybody. If we're going to go under contract, I need to know right now. Do not take my contract and shop it to 10 people over the next 10 days. If we're going to do this deal, you got to let me know within 24 hours. One of the really good ways that you put the pressure on people when you're doing this is you say, listen, I'm a real estate investor. I'm looking at deals every single day. I've got, $400,000 to take down two deals this month. Right now, I'm looking at three. Yours is one of them. I know you're on the auction list. I'd love to buy your house, but I can't sit around and wait because I've got to make decisions on these two other houses as well. So if you want me to buy your house, and you're going to have to tell me now. The other thing is, you're an investor. That doesn't mean you have all the time in the world. Doesn't mean you have all the time that you can waste on people who are just sort of, lollygagging around. You need to know because you only want to spend time with the people who are worth spending time with, meaning the motivated sellers who are going to actually sell their houses to you. So again, that's really important and something to consider, and that's how you sell and push back on that special provision. Okay, this contract is subject to inspection and partner approval. Basically saying, hey, if I have to bring my contractor through here or, a regular inspector through here, and if my contractor or inspector says, hey, instead of this property costing me, $30,000 to remodel, which is what I had originally thought it was going to cost, instead it's going to cost $55,000 to remodel, then I reserve the right, to hold up my hand and say, I'm out of here. I don't want this deal anymore. So that's the inspector approval. The partner approval is very similar. A lot of you guys who are working on these deals are going to be working in partnerships. One person's doing one thing, the other person's doing the other thing. So it's really important, that the partner, approves the deal, and you're just letting, whoever you're working with know, hey, I'm the only one who was able to get to the property today to actually see it and inspect it, but my partner has the final say on it as to whether or not we're going to do this deal. So it's another good thing to include in there. Rental deposits, a lot of contracts will list information that's specific to prorations, but most of those prorations are limited to taxes, county property taxes, and they're limited to HOA dues. They do not talk anything, they don't say anything about rents, so rents and or rental deposits. So let's say you're buying a rental property, and let's say it's rented, and let's say you're closing on the 15th. Now think about this. When did the seller get the money for the rents that month? They got it on the 1st, okay? So you're closing on the 15th. Aren't you really due that other 15 days of rent? The answer is yes. But the problem is many contracts do not include that, that the rents are prorated as well. So you do need to include that. And if you don't include it in the contract, in the special provision, so that the title company gives that money to you at the time of closing, then where you need to include it is in your offer price. So, if they say, no, you can't have any of the rents, you can't have any of the deposits, they're not there, then you're going to have to go ahead and compute that into what your maximum allowable offer is, because I can guarantee you, specifically with the deposits, you're going to end up getting the only renter in the world who leaves their house absolutely 100% spick and span. Golly, I'm having a hard time talking right now, and they're going to want their entire deposit back. So if you didn't collect it from the original seller, guess what? That's coming out of your pocket. So you need to understand how that's going to affect you and going to affect your bottom line. So go ahead and write that in if it's a property that's currently being leased. You may write in there that the buyer will pay all closing costs, or you may write in there that the seller will pay all closing costs, or you may write in there, for example, buyer will pay all closing costs except for title insurance, which, by the way, title insurance is typically one of the most expensive parts of, a real estate closing transaction. So title insurance, at least in Texas, is typically about 1% of the total sales price of the property. So if you're dealing on a, 2,500 $250,000 home, the numbers get, you know, as a percentage, the numbers get lower as the home prices get higher. But that may have, you know, a $2,000 title insurance bill, for example. And all the other closing costs may only total $750. So if you're telling them, you pay this and I'll pay the rest, basically you're telling them, pay the lion's share of the closing costs and I'll get the rest. Now, sometimes when you're, you know, negotiating with someone too, like a seller too, and they say, I have to have $100,000, and you know that the max you can really pay for that property is $98,000 or $99,000, you may tell them, I'll give you the term that you want, which is the $100,000, but I cannot afford to pay any of the closing costs. So you're going to have to pay all the closing costs associated with this transaction. And they may say, okay, as long as I get my $100,000. So you can still sort of work these things. And this is, again, part of the steak and the sizzle, how you are actually describing these things to the seller. Or if, you know, the seller's worried, you know, how much this is going to cost them or what, how much this is going to be, you may say, listen, you know, if you get your price, you may say, hey, I'll go ahead and pay all the closing costs, but you have to give me this sales price, which again will give them a warm fuzzy so that they know exactly what they're going to walk away with. You may also put in there some additional requirements. Some of the requirements might be for some repairs that are needed on the property. Although typically with a motivated seller, I don't like to ask them to make any repairs, but you know, you never know. There can also be penalties for not closing. You cannot believe the number of motivated sellers who, you know, think that they can pack up an entire house in a day and, you know, call you the day before closing and say, I'm not ready. So you can put in there penalties for not closing in time. Broom swept clean. This is one of my favorites. On just about every single house that I go under contract with as the investor buyer, I always write in the same provision in there if the seller is leaving, if the seller is currently living there. And that is that the seller will, number one, leave their property empty of all personal possessions, meaning I don't want to clean up any of your trash. And number two, that you will leave the property broom swept clean. Now, I'm not asking you to, you know, I'm not going to go in there with a white glove and do a white glove test on, you know, all the windowsills and all the ceiling fans and everything like that. But I do want it clean enough to where I don't have to go in there and pay someone to, you know, clean it just so I can get started working on it. And I got to tell you, sellers have a, you know, some of these motivated sellers, they just want to move on. They have a lot of junk. Even when we move, we have a lot of junk and we don't want to move it all out, right? It's those last couple items that are such a pain in the butt that no one really wants, that are just going to just drag the process to an absolute slow halt, that are, you know, it's going to cost somebody some money to move those away. The question is it going to cost you, the investor, money, or is it going to cost the seller money to get their stuff out? I want it to cost the seller money. We have bought houses and guys, you know, this is the honest truth on one of them. One house, we actually got several bids to clean out the property after the seller abandoned it. One of the bids was for $3,600. Okay. That is money off of your profit. That's money off your bottom line. Guess what? Get the seller to clean out their trash, because it will cost you money if you have to do it yourself. Okay, let's see what else. And additionally, if they're getting money from the sale of the property, for example, you know, let's say that they're going to get $5,000 after they sell it to me and they're living there, then I will say, you know, the house has to be left broom swept clean, number one, empty of all personal possessions, number two, and, you know, number three, the buyer and the seller agree to hold back funds from the proceeds that are going to the seller up to X amount of dollars, and $5,000 is a really good motivating number, just by the way, guys, until the seller is fully moved out of the property. So you're going to sign a separate escrow agreement with the title company and or with the closing attorney that includes that in there. And you know what? Some, you know, sellers will hem and haw about having to do that. And yes, it's going to be a pain in the butt, but guess what? Sometimes that's the only, you know, you always want to negotiate with a carrot and with a stick. Okay. The carrot is that $5,000 that's waiting there for them. The stick is again, basically that $5,000 that's working there for, that's still there for them. You know, if they don't clean it out, then you get to keep it. If they clean it out, then they get to get it. So there's some incentive there to keep them doing what you want them to do so that you can afford to buy the property and you can actually make your money on the property. So do include those, you know, provisions in there if they are still living in there. I had one seller, it took him an extra 3 weeks to get his stuff out of the property, and he wanted to leave it just as it is, and he wanted us to sign off and say, okay, fine, we'll give you the, you know, actually the final $5,000. And we said, no, you've got to empty out all of your trash. I am an investor. I am not the trash man. You are an investor. You are not the trash man. You don't want to clean up their crap. So that's all I'll have to say about that. And this one's kind of a funny one too. The next one, which is all appliances stay. I have had sellers try and take water heaters and actually take them. I've had sellers take water softeners, and I have had sellers take stoves. Okay, those things stay with the property. If you read a regular contract, specifically the Texas contract, it says anything that's attached stays with the property. Well, you would think that a stove, a water heater, a dishwasher, a water softener, all that stuff, air conditioner is attached, but sometimes you need to make those points in there. And you can either write them in or you can underline where they are in the contract, because again, you're dealing with motivated sellers, which means you're dealing with desperate sellers. So they may say, you know, gosh, you know, I could probably get $400 for that stove on eBay, or I could probably resell that dishwasher for $150. They may get $150 out of it, but you're going to pay $400 or more to replace some of this stuff. So sometimes you need to emphasize it. Now, one thing that I also will typically put in there, if it's a property that needs a lot of repair and some scary repair, one thing I'll put in there to sort of ease the concerns of the seller is that I want to let you know I'm buying the property as is. I'm not going to ask you to make any repairs, so don't worry about that. So that will make the seller typically feel good that, you know, you're not going to come back to them to try and renegotiate. However, if, you know, again, we went through the example where the contractor or inspector comes in and says, oops, you know, it's going to cost you $55, or you thought it was only going to cost you, you know, $30 or $40, then you may have to kind of come back to the negotiating table, but you're still not going to ask them to make repairs. Let's see. We're going to go through go ahead and take a look at the investing strategy section. That's going to have some of the additional special provisions in there. We've got a section in there for you called Papering Up the Deal, and that's going to go through a whole nother list of additional special provisions that are very specific to MAPS deals. So you're going to really like those as you go through those.